Hi, and welcome to a brand new podcast mini-series called Life After Trek. I'm your host, Captain Pike, or Chris, from Subspace Communique. I'm the chief editor and writer for Subspace Comms. This podcast mini-series is going to be a conversational interview with former Trek cast and crew. Our first interview tonight is with Manu Inte-Reme. Many of you know him as Icheb from Star Trek Voyager. We got the chance to talk to Manu recently during the WNBA finals. He took some time out during the halftime and gave us a good 30-minute interview. We got to catch up with Manu on his current work, what he's done in Star Trek Voyager, obviously, and his kind of inspirations in acting. Tonight, I'm joined during the interview with Charity from Subspace Comms. But here's our first interview with Manu, and we hope you guys really enjoy it. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Tonight, we're pleased to welcome our first guest to the podcast. You may know him as Icheb from Star Trek Voyager. We'd like to give a warm welcome to Manu Inte-Reme. Hey, Manu, thanks for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome, man. Good to be here.
Yeah, totally. We really appreciate it. You know, we kind of want to start with your current projects. Then we're going to go ahead and move into your acting inspirations. And then at the end there, talk a little bit about Star Trek Voyager. So why don't we go ahead and start with your most recent project, and I think Charity's going to take the first question.
All right, cool.
Yeah, hi. We just saw a trailer for Fortress, and we're wondering if you could give us some info on it.
Yeah, Fortress is going to be hot. It's a World War II extravaganza about this B-17 bomber crew. It's a dramatization of a bunch of different guys flew on this plane, but it flew 17 missions from Africa over Italy in World War II. And it's called Fortress. It's with me, Chris Owen. A couple of other actors that have made appearances on Star Trek are in it too, which was kind of weird. Also directed by Mike Phillips, who way back in the day got his start doing makeup, working for Michael Westmore, and now he's a director for all those History Channel shows like Patton 360 and Battle 360 and stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
But me, it's me, Chris Owen. God, we filmed it almost a year ago. It's going to be out the first month of next year, January. I'm trying to think of the other actors from Star Trek's name. Sean McGowan, who was on Enterprise for 4 episodes. I don't remember his character's name, but he was like one of the American like security crews.
The Makos?
There were like 4 guys that came in for a few episodes, and they were like, I don't know, they were like a security crew. I didn't see the episode, so I don't really know. But
yeah, it's probably Sean, it was probably a Mako. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Sergeant Richards or something like that, or Captain Richards or something like that. Sean McGowan, but also a great actor who's blowing up at the moment. He was Snow Job in the G.I. Joe movie.
And oh, wow.
He's going to do G.I. Joe 2, and Snow Job's going to be a much bigger character, so he's rolling along. And I can't remember the other actor's name, but Bug Hall is also in it. He's been around for a while. And it's gonna be sick, man. I got to see a rough cut of the film a couple weeks ago, got invited down to the studio, and it's awesome. I play Sergeant Charlie O'Hare. This guy that's been, he's the medic and he's also the radio operator on the plane. And I just, you know, I've got a lot of scenes with blood and guts and flak exploding around me and leaping out of the plane with guys and pulling their chutes for them. And so it's really exciting CGI, and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
I've also got a movie coming out called Expired that I'm hoping is going to make a big splash at Sundance. It's like a almost NC-17, not going to be, but it's a pretty heavy-duty, dark comedy, kind of a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas type of drug movie about these 4 super hardcore drug addicts that also, like, their hustles are, one guy's a fake policeman, one guy's a fake waiter, one guy's a fake doctor, and I play this guy that has made his car into a parking enforcement officer's car. Got a uniform, And he goes around giving people fake tickets and then explaining, and then it's when they go, "Oh man, you're giving me a ticket," he'll go, "Well, okay, hey, give me $10 and I'll write you the ticket." that's his hustle. So all these drug addicts that are faking that they're like upstanding citizens are all messing with each other's lives. And I'm kind of giving away the ending, but you don't even really realize that some of these, like the cop arrests me a couple times, and then about a third of the way into the film, you realize the cop's not really even a cop, and he's been hustling me. And just, you know. Also, it's going to be full of weird colors and weird CGI effects too. Like when I'm walking down the street, I'm so completely out of my mind on everything that the guy does to himself. The fish are swimming by, and it's one of those really Train Spotting like Fear and Loathing like drug films.
So at some point in the movie, do you actually end up with a giant lizard tail on?
I wish. But there's there's sequences like that, just horrible apartments that very Terry Gilliam-esque, and that's made by Michael Colton and Barry Neller from Tiger Storm Productions. Fortress is made by Radical 3D and Bayou Pictures. And I also just booked a romantic comedy with Stephen Bauer. If you don't know who Stephen Bauer is, he was like in Scarface.
Oh, right on.
Pacino's buddy in Scarface. But I can't say the name of it, and I don't know when I'm shooting it, because the lead role, I play this roommate of I'm like a trust fund party kid roommate to the main character, and he has a TV series right now, and they're trying to figure out if they can shoot around his schedule or if we have to wait for the hiatus to start shooting. So
gotcha.
All the actors aren't completely signed on yet, so I can't go and start promoting it yet, but still pretty excited about that too.
Yeah, totally.
And to take it back to Fortress, when did you say it was going to be released?
January.
Okay. And you said it was based on a true story. Do you know the name of the B-17?
Well, it's the Lucky Lass.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And, I don't know if that was, if they're taking a, I don't know how much of the script is true and how much of it's a dramatization. I don't know if that was the actual name of the plane or not. I think it was, but I could be mistaken.
Well, that's cool. So it's kind of like a Memphis Belle kind of film?
Almost exactly like a Memphis Belle.
Oh, that's great.
A lot of young Hollywood kids, and it's about a B-17, and it's very... In fact, the whole time, almost every actor that went to work on it, we all found out during the shoot that we'd all watched Memphis Belle to prepare for it.
That should be really interesting, though. You really don't see many World War II movies that focus on the Africa campaign, so that should be really cool.
Yeah, it's going to be neat. And I guess, that there's also only like 8 of those planes left that actually fly. So, and in Memphis Belle, they like, accidentally broke 2 of them.
Oh, wow.
And, there's a lot of B-17s left, but there's not a whole lot of them that actually get airborne. So.
Right. And did you guys get any time in one?
Yeah, I got to cruise around in it, but we didn't shoot in it. We shot in a replica.
Okay, right on.
With blue screen around the... We shot in a studio, and it was really cool how they built it. They built this, full-size... Actually, it was a little bigger than a real B-17 so that they could get cameras in there and make it look, it wouldn't be so squished for everybody. But they put the whole plane up on, part of the system was a hydraulic system, and then part of it was on these inner tubes on a huge plywood, a huge set that like 6 guys would have to get around the outside of. And they hired crew to bounce up and down outside the airplane. So while we're inside, and the camera shooting out the window past our faces to the blue screen, the plane is actually bouncing around and shaking like it would be in flak.
No, that's cool. That's very cool.
But these poor guys, man, it's like 8 hours on the set. They're just making the plane shake. It's like that's quite a workout.
But. Of course, that's probably a bit of a departure from when you were on Voyager, when you guys just had to kind of shake around when the ship was getting hit, right?
That's what I said to them. I'm all, Mike, I go, how we used to do it on Voyager? Just shake the camera a little bit. We'll fall over a little bit. That's all it takes. He's all, no, we want it to be realistic for you guys. We're going to shake the plane. I'm all right.
That's cool. That's very cool.
I've seen a bunch of stuff on masterpieces too, but not a lot of details, just a lot of bits and pieces. Do you have any info on that one?
Oh, wow. I forgot about Masterpieces even. Masterpieces was a short film done by Dustin Coffia and Lamar Sukla Productions. And it was a story about this kid that just had had a really rough life and thought about actually doing what the Columbine kid did, but was able to get the help that he needed not to.
Oh, okay.
And, it was a short film. The whole time you're wondering if this guy is going to go postal, and then you meet him at my age, and at my age he's still suicidal, and then he gets the help that he needs at the end of the film. But it's really kind of dark, but at the same time an uplifting story, and it's won a couple awards at a few little film festivals, but it was a relatively small production.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a really interesting premise.
Yeah, it was fun to play the guy. That was what attracted me to that movie.
Yeah, I could imagine. You know, I, not being an actor myself, I could imagine you guys wanting to kind of explore the gamut of emotions and situations, and so I could see how that'd be a really interesting job for you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't speak for anybody else, but that's what attracts me to acting, and the whole idea is that you get to step into another person's shoes, experience their emotions, especially if it's a hardcore thing like a war or something.
Right.
Like never in this life do I want to actually go to war, but do I want to be able to like be a part of somebody else's story and share somebody's story, and through that, you know, when you go into one of those movies that's just so powerful that you walk out and you feeling more connected to the world, to your fellow man, or just inspired in your own life. Just one of those movies that just rocks you.
Right.
I mean, that's the dream of all actors, is just to be a part of a project that is that good, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's about, you know, and it really doesn't matter the emotion to me. As long as I'm affecting people in at least a positive way. I'm the only films that I'm not hip on are like just total absolute violent, like, pointless slasher films that, like, I'm down for a good scare, but there's some films that get made that I'm just like, wow, that was just evil. Like, what was the point of making that?
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of torture movies lately. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Just like, why? I mean, it just seems like it's not even entertaining to me. It's just disgusting.
Right.
And the, you know, the bad guys win, and I'm okay with the bad guys winning. There's no real rules, but there's some films that are just so negative that I wouldn't want to be a part of. But.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now that we're talking about acting a little bit, maybe I could ask you, when did you decide to become an actor, and kind of what were your influences in becoming an actor?
Well, professionally, I didn't actually begin till I was 17, but I knew from a really young age that I wanted to do it. It's a corny story, and it's up online and on my bio and everywhere. I sit at one place, and suddenly it's all over the internet, but it's true, so why not? I was 5 years old, and I was watching a production of Peter Pan in McCall, Idaho. And my name is Manu Inte Reme. I'm an Irishman, so obviously my parents are big hippies. And we moved all over the place when I was young, but we were in Idaho, in McCall, Idaho, and I just watched the actors started flying around on the stage. And as a kid, that was it. I was hooked. I was like, I want to do that. And so any town that we moved to, my parents would get me into community theater and stuff. But the whole, you know, all my childhood, no matter where we were, I was telling my parents I wanted to go to Los Angeles. As soon as I found out where those movies came from, that's where I wanted to go. But my hippie parents do not like the big city. So as soon as I was 17 and I finished up high school, I did this play called Marvin's Room. And there was a manager. I was in San Luis Obispo. And there's a manager was in the audience. And she said, hey, what are you doing after high school? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, if you package your stuff and move to Los Angeles, I'll represent you and I'll get you an agent. And I took the opportunity and went.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's great. Yeah,
you only get chances like that every once in a while. It's cool you took the opportunity for sure.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. Sorry.
I didn't really have much else to say there. So.
Okay. Now, I was just going to ask, did you have any other actors that were a big influence on you?
I could give you a few of my favorites. Every actor is a big influence on me, and every filmmaker, every writer, you know. Anytime I see something that is well done, it's an influence. There's those few out there that I think set themselves apart from the others. I've always defined a good actor as somebody that can completely character act, that
right.
doesn't just do their shtick, but they can completely become somebody else on the screen besides their own personality, like Gary Oldman, or there's not very many that are actually capable of it. I mean,
right.
Johnny Depp can do it. Gary Oldman can do it. There's not many of them.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty amazing that there are so many character actors that are involved in Star Trek, and several really good ones like Jeffrey Combs or Armin Shimerman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's funny how science fiction kind of draws in the character actor, and then you'll see them over and over again throughout the different series playing different characters, but they always seem to pull it off. So it's interesting that that you're kind of drawn towards the character actor. And we're involved in Trek.
Those two are great, but there's also just the great actors that kind of do what they do every time, but they do it so well. I'm thinking of the Englishman that plays Snape in Harry Potter. What's that man's name?
Yeah, I'm kind of racking my brain here too.
He was in Bottle Shock and. Galaxy Quest. He did a.
Oh right, Ivan Reich. No, that's not it. What's his name? Sorry.
No, I don't. He's so good. He's so good. But anyway,
he was in Die Hard as well. Yeah, I know exactly.
Yeah. He was the bad. He was the bad guy in Die Hard. That man is an incredible actor, and to me the English actors are always the best too. Something about the English language spoken with the English accent. And then the best acting schools are over there, and it seems like the best actors come from England. There's Anthony Hopkins, and I can't believe I can't think of this guy's name that we're talking about, but I think he's amazing.
It's Alan Rickman. I just looked it up.
Rickman.
Yeah,
Thank
I looked it up on
much.
My iPhone, so.
Yeah. I mean, the way he pronunciates every single word, what's a really tricky thing to do as an actor is to appear natural and at the same time act.
Right.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of guys that can just be natural and they're just fun to watch, but then there's guys like Alan Rickman who are totally natural and totally still, but all that intensity is right to a needle point, you know what I mean? It's a fine point of skill. And there's
totally.
Not a lot of guys that are capable of that either.
Yeah, it's funny. I wonder if it's because in England, actors seem to focus so much on Shakespeare and classics. I wonder if that has something to do with the ability of, you know, bringing so many character actors from England.
I'm sure it does. I mean, if you can do Shakespeare, you can act. So
sure.
I would recommend anybody that's a young actor that do Shakespeare. I mean, because if you can say those words and say them well, you're not going to have a problem doing anything else.
Yeah, and make everyone else understand it. You know, that's key. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we also wanted to kind of ask you, you know, when you're at home and you're watching a movie or you're watching a TV show, is it hard for you to kind of disassociate yourself from the actor and kind of study the craft and just say, like, enjoy a TV show or a movie?
I don't ever enjoy anything I watch.
Oh, really?
No, I'm jealous as hell of everything. Anything that I'm not in, I can enjoy it and appreciate it and respect it, but no, I find myself anytime I'm watching something, like thinking about the writing, thinking about how great the lighting is, thinking about how great the DOP is, and thinking about how great the actor was and what they did with their eye and how they knew they were in close up there. And then when the special effects are happening, I'm wondering, wow, how did they do that? I just saw, have you guys seen Inception yet?
No, we have
yet.
Plans to see it, but not yet.
Oh, you guys should check that movie out. That's just one of the best movies I've seen this year. It's just so phenomenal in every single facet of filmmaking. And there's so many, That's a great, the coolest thing about films to me is that it's every great art that mankind's thought up all squished together and put in one place. You know, it's music, it's photography, it's painting, set design, architecture. You know, any art you can think of is in film. And so I guess, I mean, that's what's so attractive to it as someone that, you know, as an artist, poetry, writing, it's all there when you stick the DVD in the machine and watch the movie.
You know, you're right. It really is a culmination of all the different arts. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So when, and I, you know, my complete goal in life is to direct and write and act. So, I just produced my first film 2 years ago called Za, a pizza movie.
Very cool.
It was an experiment. I didn't make the greatest film in the world, but I learned so much because I had this big ego of acting for 12 years, thinking I knew what it was to make movies. And I found out when I made that, oh my God, there's so much that goes into a film, and acting is just one little dinky ingredient.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned Za. We saw that you're going to be at Starbase Indie in November, and they're going to do a showing of Za.
Yeah, I'm going to screen it when I come out there.
Yeah, we're actually thinking about heading out there, and we also saw that you're going to be at the Hollywood Expo in October.
Yeah, I am. That one's an easy one because I just drive up the street.
Yeah. So other than those two, do you do many conventions on a regular basis, or is it kind of hit and miss for you?
Well, you know, I used to do them all the time when the show ended, but I pretty much went to every major city in the States and all over Europe, and after like 3 years of doing conventions, I was finding myself, you know, doing that for a living instead of focusing on my career.
Sure.
And when it's like 3 years after the show's over, you start to get sick of, so what are you doing now?
Yeah, I bet. So, and all the regular questions that I'm sure you heard 1,000 times.
Yeah. No, I'm a huge fan of the fans. I'm, you know, totally humble and respectful and happy that they love the show. But for me personally, I started to feel like I was using the fan base by going around and hawking my picture instead of, like, you know, doing what I was doing. So I took a break from conventions for a while and went back and focused on getting my career back together. And now that I've done that, I've started to go again because I've got something to promote and something new to show instead of just old Egypt.
Well, sure, yeah, and you have a fresh perspective on it. That's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I still do, I don't know, a number of them a year. I did Germany a few months back, and I'm going to Indianapolis and the Hollywood thing. And there's a couple people out there that are good friends of mine that, you know, one every 3 or 4 months, I'll find myself going and checking back in with the Star Trek world. But it used to be, you know, constant. It used to be a couple times a month, but I don't do it that much anymore.
Yeah, I could imagine. I've been to, we went to the Vegas convention, and, you know, I was there for the site and covering it for the site, and I was exhausted by the end of the convention. So I can't imagine doing that on a regular basis. I'm sure it was physically and emotionally exhausting for you.
Oh, it's definitely, just to be, you know, it gives you a great respect for is you get to feel what it's like to be famous, you know, like famous, like
right.
Brad Pitt famous. Yeah, can you imagine how weird it would be to wherever you walked, have people know you, want to take a picture with you, want to talk to you about something? It would be exhausting. I don't know how people deal with that. Like at a convention, I get there and I'm excited and it's fun, and the first couple of days it's great, but by the end of the third day you're like, wow, I can't go down to the cafe right now without taking like 6 pictures and signing like 6. And that's just on day 3, and you know, we're not even famous, we're just, you know, sci-fi guys from a TV show a while back. But I mean, it would be so. I understand why they, you know, movie stars go and they get their little houses in France or whatever and hide and do media when they have to do it. But I think fame, like ultimate huge fame, would be exhausting.
Yeah, no kidding. I can't imagine.
And, you know, leaving your room. Could you imagine you guys get up and go to work in the morning, you come outside, and there's, like, photographers hiding behind your bushes and taking your car to work, and, like, and then, like, all it takes is one little freak out, and you throw your phone at a cameraman or something, and
right.
then you're all over the magazines, and, you know, I understand why they freak out, too. It's like, would you guys get away from me?
Yeah. No, I can't imagine that. That's crazy. Yeah. So I think we're probably going to transition into Voyager now and ask you a couple questions about that.
Okay.
Coming on into Voyager, towards the end of the series in a recurring role, what was it like for you joining the cast? Was it a welcoming experience for you? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was awesome because before Voyager, I'd done a few films and I'd done guest spots on a lot of different shows. And a lot of times in Hollywood, you run into to egos. And when you're just a guest star for an episode, you get to the set and, you know, you're not treated as a part of the team.
Right.
And when I went to Voyager, right from the get-go, Picardo and Jerry and everybody was willing to run lines and rehearse and, you know, welcome to the show. And everybody on that show had already been there 6 years, had had good careers before that, but was also just a humble and an awesome person to work with. I didn't have anybody on that show that wasn't a consummate professional and a really good human being, which was refreshing and at the same time kind of cool that, you know, with Star Trek and its message of you know, being cool to each other as, you know, the ultimate, you know, there's always a moral at the end of Star Trek episodes.
Right.
It was cool. It was cool to see that the people making it were also good people.
Oh, that's awesome.
I had a blast. The 2 years I worked on that show were, man, some of the best 2 years of my life. Like, working with those people were great.
So were you a fan
Ethan
before
Phillips,
oh, I'm
Ethan
sorry,
Phillips
go ahead. Collect,
I'm sorry, but he, you know, he collects jokes. He goes to joke conventions. And so he like every 3 months he goes to these conventions where everybody around the world shares their jokes. And so he can literally tell you jokes all day long and does.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great.
And so, yeah, and that's just too cool, man. If you know, somebody that has that much to share and that much energy, it's like, it was great.
Yeah, that's awesome. So were you a fan before the show, or was that your kind of first experience with Star Trek?
I was a fan. I was, I'd seen every film, and, you know, certainly the first time I got beamed up, I was, I cannot believe I'm getting beamed up. This is too cool. even though it's, you know, just cut, walk off the camera action, you know,
right.
Really get beamed up, but still it was like, wow, I'm gonna get beamed up. That's too much. I hadn't kept up with the shows after Next Gen. I watched Next Gen quite a bit, but my buddy Damien liked Voyager, and almost every time I was at his house he was watching it, and I'd seen several episodes, so I did know who the Borg were and who the actors were on the show, and I was totally excited to work with Jerry Ryan and Bob Picardo, and knew Bob Picardo's work from before Voyager. So yeah, I was totally came on as a fan.
That's sure. Awesome. So when you came on the set for the first time to Voyager, you know, because us seeing it on TV, we're obviously seeing it through the lens of television, and the sets to us look great. And since the show was shot in standard def, not high def, what were the sets like? Was it immersive for you, or could you kind of see the man behind the curtain?
The sets were awesome. I mean, the ship, there's a little bit of both to that question. You know, because the doors don't open automatically. It's two guys pulling a rope. But still, the ship took up three studios. I don't know if you've ever been to LA and seen a studio, but a studio is gigantic warehouse. And most shows are shot on one. Some shows share one. And the ship was three studios big. So, you know, tunnels and sick bay and all the different sets. It was outstanding. But and then the second half of the third studio they'd used to they were always building something new for, you know, whether it was a Borg episode and a Borg ship or any other race's ship or a planet or a cave, or it was always getting ripped down and built up and ripped down and built up, and there'd always be something new and cool in there. That set, which half of it was where they would build what they needed to build for new episodes, and then the other half was was Astrometrics and the Delta Flyer and the green screen around the Delta Flyer. The only thing that I can think of that was a little bit of man behind the curtain was like the doors. Like I said, two guys pulling ropes off the side of the screen, and space. I always assumed that space was a green screen, but it's just a black curtain with little lights behind it.
Oh, wow.
Shining through the holes. I know on Enterprise they started to do green screens, but right. On Voyager it was still just the hanging curtain with Christmas lights. So.
That's interesting. Wow. That's, yeah, that's really cool. So did you have much of a working experience with Rick Berman and Brannon Braga? Were they hands-on or...?
Brannon was. Rick, I didn't see more than a few times. You know, he ran the show, so he was off in his office, and if there was a costume check or a line change or if you wanted to talk to him about something, you certainly had the right to go over there and have a chat with him. But I never really had, you know, anything to question Rick about, you know. As a guest star on the show for those two seasons, I wasn't going to be like, you know, I got an idea for this episode. but Brannon was down on the set quite a bit. And, you know, after my third episode, when the episode was based around my character, and I was totally nervous to shoot it, wondering if I had what it took to, you know, hold people's attention for that long and play this character that they'd given me. He was awesome. He was down there and great shooting yesterday and great stuff and totally a hands-on producer. So
oh, that's awesome. Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, before I kind of tell you one of my favorite episodes, we've kind of got the idea that we want to wrap up the show by asking each cast member their favorite episode. I know that's kind of the quintessential question you get at conventions, but maybe you could...
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really.
What's that?
That's not really that's not a common question.
Oh, no kidding.
Believe it or not.
Fantastic. Yeah. So what is your favorite episode then?
Well, it's one that I wasn't in for Voyager. I remember being totally blown away by this episode that was about, I don't remember what they were called, but all the people on the ship were getting bodily ailments like headaches and backaches and getting sick and et cetera. And toward the end of the episode, I think something happened where she could start seeing these invisible aliens that were running experiments. Do you guys remember this episode?
Yeah, I'm racking my brain for the episode title because I just saw that one. It's in season 4.
And none of them were aware that they were getting, you know, weird alien experiments done on them until I think it was 7 that started to see them. What was it called? Did you just think of it?
No, I can't think of the name. I wish I could. I just saw the episode. It was in season 4. Favorite part for me in that at the end was when Janeway flew the ship into that binary pulsar to drive the aliens away. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, she had all those huge needles sticking out of her head. It was fantastic. It was like Twilight Zone-esque. I remember that's one of the episodes I was sitting at Damien's house before I was even on the show. And I went, wow, this show was rad. I see why you like this show.
Yeah. So. That's one cool thing about Trek, and I'm sure you experienced this too, but, you know, just the gambit that the show would run, it wasn't always science fiction. Could be drama, could be comedy. You know, they always kind of ran the gambit with it and always told a really great story. So.
Yeah, those are always some of my favorite episodes too, when they go into the, you know, they do like one of those holodeck episodes where they're in like the 1940s or whatever. Like those episodes are always great.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And the one for me, I think, is Q2, the one that you played with John Delancey's son.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a good episode. I always loved the Qs as a race of characters. So it was neat to work with both John Delancey and his kid.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, you know what? We really appreciate you taking the time to join us here and answer our questions. And hopefully everybody out there will keep their eyes open for Fortress. It's coming out in Expired. Is that right?
As Fortress Expired, and God, I wish I could tell you the name of the romantic comedy, but at the moment, announcing it on Facebook within the next couple of weeks.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah. And if you do, we'll make sure and post it on the site. So.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. I really appreciate it though. Thanks a lot for hanging out with us for a few minutes.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. It's Charity and Chris.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You too.
I'm going to go watch Angel McCautry and the Atlanta Dream. Come on, Seattle.
Yeah. Enjoy. I really appreciate
totally.
It.
All right.
Thanks again.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
So that's our very first episode, and I want to give a big thanks to everyone for listening. We do have a few more stars lined up for other shows. I don't want to give anything away just yet until we have some dates set into place, but thanks again for listening. If you've never been to our site before, it's subspacecommunique.com. My name's Chris. I'm also known as Captain Pike. And again, I really appreciate you listening. And until next time, live long and prosper.